Hello, I'm Michelle Hanratty. Thank you for listening to Sound Optometry. Just a reminder that you will no longer receive a CPD point by listening to this episode of the podcast. But if you subscribe and listen to the most recent episodes of Sound Optometry, you can gain CPD points. I hope you enjoy this episode of Sound Optometry. Hello, I'm Michelle Hanratty. Welcome to Sound Optometry, the podcast from Docket that provides high-quality continuing professional development for all GOC-registered optometrists. With case studies and in-depth conversations, each month we explore the topics that matter the most to us optometrists. You can gain one CPD point by listening to this podcast and completing the short exercise on our website, docket.info. In this episode, we'll be discussing a condition that affects half of the population, but is incredibly poorly understood. Of course, we're talking about menopause. Most women experience menopause between the ages of 45 and 55, but it affects everybody differently. Some women don't experience any symptoms at all, but for others, it can be agonising and unpredictable. Today, we'll talk to Stuti Misra, an associate professor in ophthalmology at the University of Auckland, about the surprising ways menopause can affect the eye.
More than a third of lifetime is spent in perimenopause and menopausal years. So I think being aware of that and explain things that it's going to change and it's coming.
But first, to get a better idea of the impact of menopause more broadly, I'm joined by Julia Sen. Julia is a consultant ophthalmologist and oculoplastic surgeon. Hello, Julia.
Hello, Michelle. Lovely to speak to you.
So just for those listeners who don't really know very much about menopause, how would you explain it to them?
The definition of menopause is when a woman has had her final period. So it's a point in time. But in reality, it's the years leading up to menopause where hormones start to become dysregulated. So instead of having this lovely symphony of hormones that are cyclical every month in a regular fashion, we get fits and starts of hormonal release, deficiencies, and these high peaks and low troughs of hormones in the perimenopause, as we would now call it, up to a decade prior to menopause itself, can be really disruptive. And so a lot of women start to notice symptoms long before they would describe themselves as being menopausal or postmenopausal.
Menopause can actually last quite a long time, can't it?
It can. And as I say, our ovaries, they don't just suddenly stop working overnight. It's that spiral into from having normal hormones, normal cycles, to when all of that stops and then we reach a plateau. And that time is where so many women have difficulties and lots of impact on various aspects of their lives that they can find extremely disruptive. And unfortunately, I think women historically haven't really had it very easy when they've had these symptoms because they've often been dismissed as being neurotic and whinging. It's very stereotypical, unfortunately. But I think now that the science is there and the impact of menopause is increasingly being recognised, and also the pathophysiology of that, it's now coming to the fore. And we also now have better solutions and ways of trying to help women with symptoms at this difficult stage within their lives.
Yes. And so apart from the stereotypical symptom of hot flushes, what are the other symptoms that are generally experienced by women during this stage?
I think one of the commonest is sleep disturbance. Some of that is related to hot flushes, because obviously when you overheat, you will wake up, you'll throw off the bedclothes. But a lot of women wake up without necessarily experiencing those temperature changes. So women often find that they will wake up, they're feeling anxious, they'll find something to worry about, they'll keep worrying about it, and it stops them from sleeping. That then means that they are the next day not feeling refreshed, their muscles ache, their joints ache, they can't concentrate so well, they're short-tempered, they have low mood. Often that affects appetite as well. So we tend to eat more when we have slept less, and that will add to the weight gain that many menopausal women experience. Also, in terms of interpersonal relationships, I think that's impacted hugely as well, because often women's libido can be affected. So their intimacy with their partner can suffer, and that can have repercussions on their relationships. A lot of women experience brain fog. I have to say that I'm making it sound very depressing, and these symptoms are extremely variable. Not all women experience all of them, and some women experience surprisingly few, but some of these symptoms historically haven't been attributed to menopause by healthcare providers, and a lot of women end up on antidepressants as a result, when perhaps what they needed was to have their hormonal status addressed.
And we've touched on quite a few changes there, but some changes can also affect the eyes as well, can't they?
Absolutely. We know that there are estrogen receptors in the cornea, the lens, the ciliary body, and the retina. And in fact, pretty much every organ in the body contains estrogen receptors. So it stands to reason that we're going to experience symptoms in many systems when we reach menopause. Starting at the front of the eye, we know that women in the perimenopause and menopause can start to experience increased symptoms of blepharitis. The inflammatory changes within the oil glands can mean that it affects their oil film of the top layer of their tear film, and that can lead to evaporative dry eye. They produce less in the way of their aqueous tear film, so they're producing fewer tears and they are evaporating more quickly. Another issue that's experienced is that the intraocular pressure can go up because there are changes within the trabecular meshwork, which can slow down aqueous drainage. And so for women who have a menopause prematurely, which is defined by being under 45, their risk of open angle glaucoma is increased by 2.5-fold. So that's very significant. Then we know that lens changes accelerate, the hydration of the lens and formation of cataract will accelerate in the menopause and postmenopausal eras. And we know that estrogen is also protective in retinal ganglion cell health. So certainly in laboratory animals, in rats, for example, if you mimic a retinal injury, there'll be a higher impact in postmenopausal compared with premenopausal animals of the same age. So we know there's an increased incidence of wet macular degeneration also in women who are postmenopausal.
Okay, thanks, Julia. So we'll join you again a little bit later on.
Thank you, Michelle.
Now, though, I want to explore those impacts that hormonal changes can have on the eye in more detail. So I'm joined by Stuti Misra. Stuti is an associate professor in ophthalmology at the University of Auckland in New Zealand. She also presented a webinar for the British Contact Lens Association on the impact of menopause, so she's perfectly placed to inform all of us about the current state of research. So hello, Stuti.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining me all the way from New Zealand. So what do you think are the most important things to establish when we see patients of that demographic?
I think before we step on to menopause, I think we need to understand hormonal changes. There's hormonal fluctuations in any woman of any age when you start your period. So that's age of 13, 14 or earlier. Need to understand how your body changes with these fluctuations and changes in hormones. So you've got three main hormones we are talking about here. So it's estrogen and progesterone and androgen, which is your testosterone. So when we talk about women and perimenopausal or menopausal years, it's different for everyone, as most women get periods at different age. And it's same for menopause. And also it's for different ethnicities, it's different as well. So depending on your background, it'll be different. So I think everything needs to be kept in mind when we are talking to women of any age, especially when you're looking at your 40, 45, 50. Because in perimenopause, things change. You feel that it is exponential decline, but in terms of symptoms, they do fluctuate a lot. So when we are seeing these patients, first thing I would say, as an optometrist, we need to get the symptoms right. We need to get the history right. So we need to administer some questionnaires. So to start with, there are some available for dry eye disease, for example, which is the most common effect of menopause, perimenopause. So yeah, I think in the least, the history taking is very, very important.
Yes, because as you've mentioned, hormonal fluctuations which are affecting dry eye occur much earlier because the hormones in a female are fluctuating as soon as they start their period. So it does make sense to start thinking about it much earlier rather than just waiting until a person feels like their symptoms are pushing them over the edge.
Yeah, exactly. And also your lifestyle choices, what you do every day, like are you a contact lens wearer? Are you on contraceptives? Because those can have effect on your eyes as well, ocular surface in general. So things like that, that's why it's really important to know that history.
Yes. And what are the factors that might increase the likelihood of menopause causing quite significant issues?
So we talk about history taking, as I mentioned, that's really, really important. Family history, year, at what age your mom had menopause, that is a key factor as well. And also whether there are any comorbidities, so whether there is previous history of any dry eye disease, for example, or whether there is diabetes, because we know that in diabetes as well, your eye is affected, ocular surface is affected, back of the eye is affected as well. Even depression, you know, we know that depression has association with ocular surface disease. So if there is already these things happening and you throw in your decline in estrogen, things change dramatically then.
So from a research point of view, what does that tell us about the biological mechanisms that can cause these symptoms?
So increasingly, thankfully, and finally, menopause is actually has gained a lot of press. So that's a long time coming. A lot of research has happened in recent times. But there was a study done as long ago in 2001 in Harvard Medical School. And they found that women were more affected with dry eye disease compared to men of same age. And that was an epidemiological study. So they reviewed or assessed thousands of patients. And so 20 years later, we haven't done very much in that space, right? But increasingly, there have been a few more studies recently. So we know that there was a famous study done in Korea, and that was published in 2023. So not that long ago, just last year. And they assessed patients who were on hormonal therapy. I think there were hundreds of thousands patients assessed, and they noted higher incidence of cataract. And a famous Rotterdam study in Netherlands, and they noted that menopause has higher risk of open angle glaucoma. So in glaucoma, there are quite a few studies because it's when your vision is affected essentially, right? So it becomes like a more worrying topic for patients and clinicians alike.
Yeah, and we've been discussing on this podcast the number of different factors that can influence how menopause affects the eye. But does that make it hard for research to differentiate between menopausal and non-menopausal causes?
There's so many confounding factors. There are some animal studies too, because there are some studies that we simply cannot do in humans. We talk about aging. That's something we need to do quite closely because, you know, your menopause, when it's happening, you're aging as well. So to differentiate between that, that's really hard. And when you talk about front of the eye or back of the eye, how you are in general, there's so many lifestyle, environmental factors at play here. Those things it's hard to isolate. When animal studies, you can do, they're a little more controlled. So we can assess a lot. And there is a group in America and Harvard Medical School. They do a significant amount of research in that space. And there are groups in Australia as well, where there's a lot of clinical research in hormonal changes. So things don't happen in isolation. When you're put already, your eye, your hormones, everything is under stress, and you throw in something else into the play, environmental factors, that's when you get more corneal staining, more atrophy, and more degenerative changes in meibomian glands and potential all the rest that I mentioned.
Yes. So it's understanding that sometimes the signs and symptoms aren't due to one thing. It's the cumulative effect of several factors.
Understanding the patient is the key. One size fits all does not work because not everyone has that standard 28-day cycle. Same thing happens in menopause. You don't get it at the same age, and the fluctuations or the difference and the decline is different in everyone. So therefore, the effects of it is quite different as well. So your estrogen is getting low, but if you're getting testosterone high, so you just interplay of these hormones have a lot to do with your symptoms as well. For example, the treatment of menopause, HRT, MHT, just hormonal replacement therapy, some swear by it, but some don't. And why is that? Because there is no one size fits all when it comes to hormonal changes.
And although we can't always control the factors, by understanding which ones we can control and modifying those, that can actually make a big difference to a patient, can't it?
Yes, so small changes go a long way. Yes, treat the environment that you advise to everyone, right? Just don't sit under an aircon vent all day. You're wearing contact lenses. Just be aware that your symptoms might change. So you don't want to wear contact lenses and go all out for 20 hours straight. You shouldn't wear that now. So just give your eye, you know, some time to breathe. But at the same time, if you say, yes, you're going through this menopause, just expect these changes. So just increasing awareness, like, you know, this podcast, there have been many books on the topic, like half of the population of the world is actually goes through this. So more than a third of lifetime it's spent in perimenopause and menopausal years. So that's a lot of time and it's a lot of working population as well. So I think being aware of that and being kind and just explain things that it's going to change and it's coming. So I can't sleep, my eyes are dry and sensitivity to light. I don't want to go out. I need to wear my sunglasses inside the house. So these are the usual complaints and I think we need to be aware of that.
With that in mind, it is difficult for eye care practitioners to determine whether or not their symptoms are due to hormonal changes or whether it's just the normal aging process. Apart from the history and symptoms and the questionnaires that you've mentioned, are there any other investigations that optometrists can do if they sense that actually the symptoms are related to menopause?
We don't know really because we cannot differentiate because there hasn't been many research done in this space whether these changes are simply because of age or menopause. So we do need longitudinal prospective clinical studies in both men and women. So to get that right, that because of course men don't get menopause, so that's kind of a differentiating factor, right? So whether these changes are happening with age or with menopause or perimenopause effects. In terms of doing other tests, the inflammation-related degenerative, your blepharitis, your dry eye disease, your cataract, your glaucoma, the treatment doesn't change, but what changes is the cause of it and the timing of it. And sometimes you may be predisposed to it and then hormones just push you over the edge. So it doesn't necessarily cause it always, but it just pushes you over the line of that. Yes, it's become worse. However, what hormones could do, what they could tell us, we could use that to our advantage. There's a lot of ongoing research on using these hormones as a treatment modality. So for example, like androgen patches, and that has shown positive effects when it comes to your dry eye disease symptoms. So that's shown quite promise. But of course, you can't give that because then there are other side effects. And for that, we need to do more research. So not just clinical research, not just animal research and what's happening to our body, but how we can utilize these for our own good and treat hormonal related diseases.
So that sounds like quite an interesting way of managing symptoms, but it does also sound like there still needs to be quite a lot of research carried out.
Yes, absolutely. There is a lot of research being planned. As I mentioned, there are a few groups who are extremely interested in it. There is another study, tropical estradiol treatment around eyelids, so like a cream that you can put it and that's shown quite nice results. They're like testosterone eye drops. That's kind of a big thing. I think you can get that in America. But I think there's some more ongoing studies on it. We need to see. We need more studies results.
Stuti, thank you very much.
My pleasure completely. It's been great talking to you, Michelle.
You're listening to Sound Optometry with me, Michelle Hanratty. Every month, we explore the topics that matter the most to optometrists like me and you. That's why we'd like to hear your suggestions for future episodes. So email us. The address is podcast@dockets.info or use LinkedIn to follow and message us here at Docket. To finish off this episode, I'm once again back with oculoplastic surgeon Julia Sen. Julia, why is it so important to nail our management of patients in the perimenopausal and menopausal demographic?
We've talked about the many ways that menopause can affect the eye, but I think sometimes we need to go beyond that and we need to think holistically. I often counsel patients about their diets and about omega-3, which I think is really important, and eating in a more sort of anti-inflammatory way, because that can be really helpful. Also, things like blepharitis, treating that. I offer eye light treatment within my clinic. This is an IPL and low level light therapy. We do sometimes occlude puncture. I tend not to like that so much because it tends to make the tear film a little bit more concentrated and not flowing in the same way as when the tears can flow off the eyes nicely. But it's those everyday symptoms that are particularly difficult for people. Contact lens wearers often really struggle with their contact lens wear, and then they've got to perhaps revert to glasses, which they've maybe never really wanted to do because their lifestyle or for aesthetic reasons, they'd rather not wear them. So that's a real shame when that happens for them. So anything that we can do hormonally and in terms of treatment can really enhance their quality of life.
Yes, because it's not just about the symptoms and alleviating the symptoms, because that's just like sticking a plaster on it, really, isn't it? You actually need to understand why it's happening in the first place and find out what's going to be the most effective way of actually preventing some of those feelings, not just the signs and the symptoms, but actually how people feel as well. So you offer treatments that help to deal with all of that. But apart from blepharitis and sort of ocular surface therapies, are there any other type of treatments that you do, or surgeries even?
Yes, so we know that during menopause, there are huge changes in the skin, the collagen. Women lose a lot of their collagen. And so over quite a short space of time, they can feel like they've aged significantly. And that really knocks their confidence and their sense of identity. The way that our face ages is actually very predictable, and we get bone loss. So our facial skeleton starts to become narrower. Our mid-face bones tend to absorb and move backwards, and our fat pads tend to deflate and descend. Many people find that they start looking tired. They develop bags under their eyes. And a lot of women come to me and say, my husband keeps asking me what's wrong with me, why am I miserable when I feel perfectly fine? And it's just because they're minding their own business with their neutral face, but their neutral face is starting to look like a grumpier face, because it's just that's what nature does to us. although we laugh about it, actually, your face is how you interact with the outside world. And so as a menopausal and postmenopausal woman, it starts to make people lose confidence. They stop going out and doing some of the things that they enjoy doing because they just don't feel quite like themselves. They lose their sense of identity. And so some of the work that I find really rewarding actually is the work to address some of that. So there are non-surgical modalities that you can use. And then of course, there's surgery. As an oculoplastic surgeon, my surgery is eyelids rather than facelifts. But in terms of cosmetic eyelid surgery, I tend to find that when patients come and have this, they'll come back smiling and they just say, I wish I'd had this done years ago, because they look in the mirror and they see themselves again. And if you're losing confidence, don't feel that it's vanity and that you shouldn't look into things that might help you with that, if it's right for you.
And that's the key point here, isn't it? That menopause doesn't affect everybody in the same way. It's complex and multifaceted. So because everybody's symptoms vary and their well-being can vary as well, surgery is just one of the ways that can make someone feel better about themselves. And of course, it isn't a consideration for everyone. If you feel good about yourself, then your mental health will benefit as well. So it's about having that whole holistic approach. So just to finish off then, what take-home advice would you give to optometrists that they can apply tomorrow, if necessary, to their own clinical practice?
I would say that a really good opportunity is when you see women that are coming in and they are developing presbyopia. So they may never have seen an optometrist before in their lives, but now they're finding that they need some help. And I think that's not a bad time to introduce the conversation, to almost forewarn them about, you know, this is happening because you're at this stage in your life. And you'll probably find as you go along over the next few years that many women start to develop symptoms of dry eyes. The oil glands may not work as effectively. If that happens to you, then the measures that you can take are using lubricants. It's worth talking about non-preserved lubricants, of course, because of the ocular toxicity of preserved drops. Talking about lid hygiene, particularly women that wear cosmetics, because that will help their ocular health. And you're then developing a relationship with that person. You're giving more. You want that person to keep coming back to you. I tend to find that patients that get more out of our conversation than they were expecting, they will love you for life.
Yes.
So, yeah, have that conversation early. I don't think people should avoid or shy away from trying to introduce that, even if it's just in a kind of questioning way, you know, that hormonal changes can affect the eyes. And does that patient have any understanding of where they are in their hormonal life at the moment? I think might be a delicate way of phrasing it, because I think for a lot of women, they may be thinking about it, and hearing somebody else have the same thought might validate that and might help them to seek the right advice. So I think optometrists are in a really important position. And it also means that they know that they've been heard. You understand that they have this symptom and that it's real. You know, this could be a really helpful way of facilitating that lady to go and get the help that she needs.
Yeah, so I think forewarning patients is forearming them, and so they feel they will be better prepared to deal with their symptoms when they actually occur. Mm-hmm. So Julia, thank you very much.
Thank you, Michelle. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Don't forget that if you head to docket.info and search for sound optometry, you can find additional reading materials and resources for this episode. By listening to this podcast and completing the short exercise on the website, you can gain one CPD point covering communication and clinical practice. We'll be back again next month with another episode of Sound Optometry, so make sure you hit subscribe on your podcast app so you don't miss that. That's all from us. The producer is Jason Hoskin. I'm Michelle Henratty. Thanks for listening.